Yet the sad fact is that very few people have any real goals at all. Less than 3% of men and women have their goals in writing. Fewer than 1% of them read and review their goals on a regular basis. Why not? I've concluded that there are basically 7 reasons why people don't set goals. It's important to be aware of these reasons and to determine whether or not they apply to your situation. Ignorance is not bliss. Not knowing about these mental obstacles and not learning how to counteract them can be fatal to your prospects for the future. Here are some of the reasons why people don't set goals. The first reason is that they are simply not serious. They are talkers instead of doers. They want to be more successful, they want to improve their lives, but they are not willing to make the necessary efforts. They do not have the fire in the belly that translates into a burning desire to make something of themselves, to make their lives bigger and better and more exciting. The only way you can tell what a person really believes is by his actions, not his words. It's not what you say or what you intend or what you wish or hope or pray for, but only what you do that counts. And everything counts. The second reason people don't set goals is because they haven't yet accepted complete responsibility for their lives. I used to think that goals were the starting point of success until I realized that until a person accepts that he is fully responsible for his life and for everything that happens to him, he will not even take the first step toward goal setting. The irresponsible person is the person who is still waiting for real life to begin. He uses up all his creative energies making elaborate excuses for his failure to make progress, and then he buys lottery tickets and goes home to watch television. The third reason people don't set goals is because of their feelings of guilt and unworthiness. A person who is so low mentally and emotionally that he has to look up to see bottom is not the kind of person who confidently and optimistically sets goals for the months and years ahead. A person who is raised in a negative environment, leaving him or her with feelings of undeservingness and the attitudes of what's the use and I'm not good enough, is hardly capable of serious goal setting. The fourth reason is that people don't understand the importance of goals. If you are raised in a household where your parents don't have goals and where the setting and achieving of goals is not a regular topic of family discussion, you can reach adulthood without even knowing that there's such a thing as goals outside of sports. If you move in a social circle where people do not have clearly defined goals toward which they're working on a regular basis, it'll be natural for you to assume that goals are not a particularly important part of life. Since 80% of the people around you are going nowhere, if you're not careful, you'll end up drifting with the crowd, following the followers, and going nowhere as well. The fifth reason is that most people don't know how to set goals. You can earn a university degree in our society, the equivalent of 15 or 16 years of education, never once receive an hour's worth of instruction on goal setting, even though goal setting is more important to your long-term happiness than any other single subject that you could ever learn. The sixth reason that people don't set goals is the fear of rejection, or the fear of criticism. From the time we were children, we have had our hopes and dreams slapped down by the criticism and laughter of others. Maybe our parents didn't want us to get our hopes up or to be disappointed, so they quickly pointed out all the reasons why we would not be able to achieve our goals. Our siblings and friends might have laughed at us and ridiculed us for thinking about being someone or doing something far beyond what they could imagine for themselves. These influences can affect your attitude toward yourself and goal setting for years. A child who is constantly criticized or discouraged stops coming up with new ideas, new dreams, or new goals. He begins the lifelong process of playing it safe, of selling himself short, and accepting underachievement in life as inevitable and unavoidable. The solution to this fear of criticism is simple. Keep your goals confidential. No one can laugh at you or criticize you if they don't know what your goals are. There are only 2 exceptions to this practice of confidentiality. The first are the people, such as your boss or spouse, whose help you will need to achieve your goals. You can tell them. And second, you can share your goals with other goal-oriented people, people who will encourage you in the direction you want to go. You should also make it a policy to encourage everyone you speak to who tells you about a goal they have. Tell them to go for it. Tell them you can do it. encouraging others motivates you as well. If you would like others to encourage you, take every opportunity to encourage them. The seventh and the most important reason that people do not set goals is the fear of failure. The fear of failure is the greatest single obstacle to success in adult life. It is what keeps people in their comfort zones. It is what makes them keep their heads down and play it safe as the years pass by. The fear of failure is expressed in the attitude of, "I can't, I can't, I can't." It's learned in early childhood as the result of destructive criticism and punishment for doing things your parents disapproved of. Once entrenched in the subconscious mind, this fear does more to paralyze hope and kill ambition than any other negative emotion in the human experience. The major reason for the fear of failure is that most people don't understand the role of failure in achieving success. The rule is simply this: it is impossible to succeed without failing. Failure is an indispensable prerequisite for success. The greatest failures in human history have also been the greatest successes. In the same year that Babe Ruth became the home run king of baseball, he also struck out more than any other player. Success is a numbers game. There's a direct relationship between the number of things you attempt and your probability of ultimately succeeding. Even if you were the worst player in baseball, if you swung with all your heart at every ball that came over the plate, you would eventually get a hit. And if you kept swinging, you would finally get a home run. The important thing is to swing with all your might and to keep swinging and not worry about striking out occasionally. Thomas Edison was the most successful inventor of the modern age. He received patents for 1,093 inventions, 1,052 of which were brought into commercial production during his lifetime. But as an inventor, he was also the greatest failure of his age. He failed more times, in more experiments, attempting to develop more products than any other living scientist or businessman. It took him more than 11,000 experiments alone before he finally discovered the carbon-impregnated filament that led to the production of the first electric light bulb. There's a story about Edison that says that after he had conducted more than 5,000 experiments on the light bulb, a young journalist came to him and asked him why he persisted in these experiments after having failed more than 5,000 times. Edison is said to have replied, "Young man, you don't understand how the world works. I have not failed at all. I have successfully identified 5,000 ways that will not work. That just puts me 5,000 ways closer to the way that will." The lesson from this is that you must decide in advance to take every setback as a spur to greater effort, knowing that you are getting closer and closer to success with every experience. One of the qualities of leaders is that they never use words like failure or defeat. Instead, they use words like valuable learning experiences or temporary glitches. The great football coach Vince Lombardi had the right spirit. After a game in which the Green Bay Packers were defeated, one of the reporters asked Lombardi how he felt about losing. Lombardi replied, "We didn't lose, we just ran out of time." You can learn to overcome the fear of failure by being absolutely clear about your goals and by accepting that temporary setbacks and obstacles are the inevitable price you pay to achieve any great success in life. To maximize your goal-achieving ability, you need a systematic method. You need a proven process that you can use over and over with any goal, in any situation, to bring all the powers of your mind to bear on accomplishing anything you really desire. The 12-step system you're about to learn is perhaps the most effective ever developed. It has been used by hundreds of thousands of men and women all over the world to revolutionize their lives. It's been used by corporations to reorganize themselves and to go on to greater sales and profitability. It is simple, as all true things are simple, but it is so astonishingly effective that it continues to amaze even the most skeptical people. Remember, your thoughts objectify themselves in your reality. You become and you accomplish what you think about. If you think about something with tremendous clarity and intensity, you will bring it about much faster and more predictably than in any other way. This 12-step system takes you from abstract fuzziness to absolute clarity. It gives you a track to run on to enable you to get from wherever you are to wherever you want to go. And step one is desire, intense, burning desire. This is the motivational force or power that enables you to overcome the fear and inertia that holds most people back. If you dwell upon your desires, if you think about them and write them out and make plans to accomplish them continually, your desires eventually become so strong that they override and push aside your fears. Desire is invariably personal. You can only want something for yourself, not because you feel someone else wants it for you. In setting your goals, you must be perfectly selfish. You must be absolutely clear about what it is that you want to be, to have, or to do. Deciding what you really want is the starting point of all great achievement. Step two is belief or conviction. In order to activate your subconscious mind and your superconscious capabilities, you must absolutely believe that it is possible for you to achieve your goal. You must have complete faith that you deserve the goal and it will come to you exactly when you are ready for it. You must nurture your faith and your belief until they deepen into an absolute conviction that your goal is attainable. Because belief is the catalyst that activates your mental powers, it's important that your goals be realistic, especially at first. If your goal is to earn more money, you should set a goal to increase your income by 10 or 20 or 30% over the next 12 months. These are believable goals, goals that you can get your mind around. They are realistic and can therefore be a source of motivation for you. If your goal is too far beyond anything you've accomplished in the past, it can actually be a demotivator. Because it's so distant, you often seem to be making little progress or no progress toward it. You can become discouraged more easily, and you can soon stop believing that the goal is possible for you. For example, if you want to lose weight, don't set a goal to lose 30 or 40 or 50 pounds. Instead, set a goal to lose 5 pounds over the next 30 to 60 days. As you lose the first 5 pounds, set a new goal to lose another 5 pounds, and so on until you achieve your ideal weight. A 5-pound weight loss is believable, whereas a 30-pound weight loss is so much beyond your current self-concept that your subconscious mind doesn't take you seriously. One of the kindest and most helpful things you can do for your children is to help them to set realistic and believable goals. Help them to develop the habit of setting and achieving goals, not necessarily the ability to set big goals. There's an old saying that if you save your pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves. If children develop the habit of setting and achieving small goals, they'll eventually move on to medium-sized goals and then to goals of any size. Step three in goal achieving is to write it down. Goals that are not in writing are not goals at all. They are merely wishes or fantasies. A wish is a goal with no energy behind it. When you write a goal down on a piece of paper, you crystallize it. You make it something concrete and tangible. You make it something that you can pick up and look at and hold and touch and feel. You have taken it from out of your imagination and put it into a form that you can do something with. Step four, make a list of all the ways that you will benefit from achieving your goal. Just as goals are the fuel in the furnace of achievement, reasons why are the forces that intensify your desire and drive you forward. Your motivation depends upon your motives, your reasons for acting in the first place. And the more reasons you have, the more motivated you will be. You can only motivate yourself to accomplish great things if you have a big, exciting dream. Your reasons why must be uplifting and inspiring. They must be big enough to drive you onward. It is when you have big reasons for achieving your major goal that you develop the intensity of purpose that makes you irresistible. If your reasons are big enough, your belief solid enough, and your desire intense enough, nothing can stop you. Step five is analyze your starting point. If you decide to lose weight, the very first thing you need to do is to weigh yourself. If you want to achieve a certain net worth, the first thing that you need to do is to sit down and create a personal financial statement to find out how much you're worth today. Determining your starting point also gives you a baseline from which you can measure your progress. Again, I can't emphasize too strongly that the clearer you are about where you're coming from and where you're going, the more likely it is that you will end up where you want to be. Step six is set a deadline. Set deadlines on all tangible, measurable goals, such as increases in income or net worth. Set deadlines on your health goals, such as losing a certain number of pounds or running a certain number of miles. Often people resist setting deadlines for fear that they will not achieve their goals by the time they've set for themselves. They do everything possible, including leaving the deadline vague, to avoid the feelings of discouragement they might experience. So what if you do set a goal and you don't achieve it by your deadline? Simple. You set another deadline. It just means that you're not ready yet. You guessed wrong. You were too optimistic. And if you don't achieve your goal by your new deadline, you set still another deadline until you finally do achieve it. In your thinking, project yourself forward in your mind to your completed goal, and then look back to where you are today. Imagine the steps that you would have taken to get from where you are now to where you want to be in the future. This process of planning backward from the actual achievement of your goal gives you a special perspective on what you'll have to do to achieve it. It sharpens your perceptions and gives you insights you can get in no other way. Step 7. Make a list of all the obstacles that stand between you and the accomplishment of your goal. Wherever great success is possible, great obstacles exist. In fact, obstacles are the flip side of success and achievement. If there are no obstacles between you and your goal, it probably is not a goal at all, but merely an activity. When you've listed every obstacle you can think of, organize the list in order of importance. What is the biggest single obstacle that stands between you and your goal? This is your rock. It is this rock that you must focus on removing before you get sidetracked dealing with smaller obstacles and problems. Your main obstacle or rock may be internal or external, within yourself or within the situation. If it is internal, it may be that you lack a particular skill or ability or attribute that you must have to achieve your goal. You must be completely honest with yourself and ask, "Is there anything about myself that I will have to change, or any ability that I will have to develop in order to achieve my goal?" Your major obstacle may be external. You may be in the wrong job, or with the wrong company, or in the wrong relationship. You may find that you need to start over doing something else, somewhere else, if your goal is to be achieved. What is your personal rock? Step 8 is to identify the additional information you will need to achieve your goal. We live in a knowledge-based society, and the most successful people are those who have more essential information than others. Almost all mistakes that you make in your financial life and your career will be the result of having insufficient or incorrect information. One of your ongoing responsibilities is to learn what you need to know so you can accomplish what you want to accomplish. If you don't have the knowledge or information yourself, where can you get it? Is it a skill you need to learn yourself through study and practice? Or can you hire someone else with this knowledge? Who else has achieved success in your particular field, and could you go to him or her for advice? Make a list of all the information, talents, skills, abilities, and experience that you will need, and then make a plan to learn, buy, rent, or borrow this information or skill as quickly as you can. Step 9 in goal achieving is to make a list of all the people whose help and cooperation you will require. This list may include your family, your boss, your customers, your bankers, your business partners or sources of capital, and even your friends. To accomplish anything worthwhile, you'll need the help and cooperation of many people. Take this list and organize it in order of priority. But remember, people will be willing to help you achieve your goals only when you have demonstrated a willingness to help them to achieve their goals. The most successful people in our society in all fields are those who have helped the greatest number of other people to get the things they want. They build up a reservoir of goodwill and create a propensity in others to help them, to reciprocate for having been helped in the past. So if you want to increase the quantity and quality of your returns, you need to increase the quality and quantity of your service. By always doing more than you're paid for, you'll eventually be paid more than you're getting now. By over-contributing to others, you'll end up being overcompensated by others. Step number 10 is to make a plan. Write out in detail what you want, when you want it, why you want it, and where you are starting from. Then, make a list of activities organized by time and priority. Many activities can be worked on simultaneously. Other tasks have to be done in sequence, one after the other. Certain activities have to be done continuously from the beginning of the process through until the end. A plan organized by priority lists activities in their order of importance. What is the most important thing that you have to do? What is the second most important thing? Keep asking this question until you have listed every activity based on its value to the completed goal. Once you have a detailed plan of action, get started. Accept that your plan will have defects and flaws in it. Don't worry about them. Avoid the tendency toward perfectionitis, trying to do everything perfectly when it may not be that important. One of the characteristics of superior men and women is that they can accept feedback and make course corrections. Each time you hit a roadblock, go back and review your plan and make the necessary changes. The more detailed and the better organized your plans, the more likely you are to achieve your goals on schedule and exactly as you have defined them. Step number 11 is visualization. Create a clear mental picture of your goal as it would appear if it were already achieved. Project this picture over and over again on the screen of your mind. Each time you visualize your goal as accomplished, you increase your desire and intensify your belief that the goal is achievable. People who accomplish extraordinary things visualize their desired results continually. They are very clear about what they want, and of course, this refers to the clarity of their mental pictures. Unsuccessful people, on the other hand, are unsure of what they want to be and do. Their fuzzy mental pictures are too vague to motivate them. When you intensely desire something, when you're excited and enthusiastic about your goals, or when you have a deep faith that you will realize something that you're working toward, you accomplish it much more quickly. Increasing the amount of emotion with which you accompany your visualizations is like stepping on the accelerator of your own potential. You immediately begin attracting to you, like iron filings to a magnet, the people, ideas, and opportunities you need to attain your objectives. And step number 12 is make the decision in advance that you will never give up. Back your goals and plans with persistence and determination. Never consider the possibility of failure. Never think about quitting. Decide to hold on no matter what happens. And as long as you refuse to quit, you must eventually be successful. Of all the qualities you can develop, the ability to persevere in the face of the inevitable obstacles and difficulties you will face is the most important. Sometimes just your ability to persist is what it takes to overcome the most difficult of obstacles. Goal setting begins with desire and comes full circle to persistence. Many people launch themselves toward a goal and then allow themselves to slow down and stop. Once they stop, they often find that getting themselves going again is so difficult that they can't do it. Don't let this happen to you. The maintenance of momentum, once you've begun, is essential to great success and achievement. You maintain your forward momentum by taking continuous action toward goal attainment. You keep up the pressure. You define your goals in terms of the activities necessary to accomplish them, and then you discipline yourself to perform the activities. You do something every day to move you toward the achievement of your major goals. Review your goals every morning and think about them all day. Always be looking for something you can do to contribute to their achievement. To maintain momentum and keep yourself positive and motivated, you must be continually taking actions consistent with what you hope to achieve. Make sure that you mark each day with an accomplishment of some kind. The more things you do and try, the faster you do and try them, the more energy and enthusiasm you will have. And the longer you persist, the more convinced and determined you become. You finally reach the point where nothing can stop you, and nothing will. For 5,000 years of recorded history, many of the wisest men and women of each civilization have occupied themselves searching for the secret of the ages, the key that would enable them to unlock the vast treasure trove of potential that lies deep within each person. More progress has been made in finding this secret in the last 100 years than in all the previous centuries that man has been on the earth. The Secret of the Ages, the key to health, happiness, and prosperity for you and me, has been found in the superconscious mind. When you use your superconscious mind correctly, you will be able to solve any problem, overcome any obstacle, and achieve any goal you sincerely desire. All personal greatness and individual achievement are based on it. There is almost no limit to what you can accomplish when you tap into it, use it, and let it use you on a regular basis. The superconscious mind is the source of all inspiration, all motivation, and the excitement that you feel when aroused by a new idea or possibility. It's the source of hunches, of intuition, and of flashes of insight. Whenever you've been wrestling with a problem and have suddenly come up with a great idea that turned out to be the perfect solution, you were tapping into your superconscious mind. Every time you have experienced a new insight into a challenge you are facing, your superconscious mind was working. Once you begin using your superconscious capabilities in a systematic way, you will get ideas from out of the blue. Almost everyone has had the experience of thinking of a good idea for a new product or service, dismissing it because it was in a field in which they had no experience, and then seeing some other company come out with the same product or service a couple of years later and make a fortune. The difference between the person who had the idea and ignored it and the person who came up with the idea and ran with it was that the person who did something with the idea had a higher level of trust and confidence in himself and his ability to turn the idea into reality. Because of childhood conditioning, we tend to ignore our own ideas, assuming that they couldn't be worth very much when, in fact, they could contain the germ of an idea that could change our whole lives. When you begin accepting the value of your superconscious insights, you will be amazed at the kind of ideas that come to you. And the next time you have an idea, you'll do something with it. Your superconscious mind functions on a non-conscious basis 24 hours per day, 365 days per year. Once you've programmed a goal or problem into your subconscious mind and then released it, it is transferred to your superconscious mind, which goes to work on it. You can then go about your daily life with your conscious and subconscious energies focused on the work at hand, while your superconscious mind is busily working to bring you whatever you need to achieve your goal. Your superconscious mind is capable of goal-oriented motivation. However, to generate this motivation, your superconscious mind requires clear, specific goals to which you are completely committed. It then releases ideas and energy for goal attainment. The superconscious mind is a source of free energy. This is a phenomenon you've experienced many times before. It's the mental and physical and sometimes emotional energy that surges through you during periods of great excitement or intense desire or even extreme danger. When you're working towards something that's important to you, you often experience a boundless flow of energy that enables you to work day and night with very little sleep. Usually, this is called nervous energy, but of course, we know that nerves have no energy of their own. Have you ever had the experience of having to get up in the middle of the night because of an emergency? In no time, you find yourself wide awake, alert, and functioning effectively, whereas a short while before you were tired and sound asleep. This is an example of tapping into the free energy of your superconscious mind. Your superconscious mind responds best to clear, authoritative commands, or what are called positive affirmations. Every time that you affirm a goal or a desire from your conscious mind to your subconscious mind, you activate your superconscious mind to release the ideas and energy that you need to bring your desire into reality. This is why decisiveness is such an important trait of successful men and women. Because they know exactly what they want, their superconscious powers are working for them continuously. You will also find that when you stop vacillating and make a firm, clear decision that you are going to do something no matter what the cost, everything suddenly starts to work in your favor. You'll be amazed at how much more effective you become when you make firm decisions and burn your mental bridges behind you. Cut off all thought of quitting or retreating or doing something else. Make the decision that you are going to do whatever it takes to achieve your goal and that nothing is going to stop you. At that point, even a person with average abilities becomes an extraordinary agent of accomplishment. If you look back over your life, you will find that almost everything worthwhile that you have accomplished was preceded by what appeared to be difficulties, disappointments, and temporary failures. Often, you had to ride an emotional roller coaster of fear, anxiety, and worry. However, in retrospect, you can see that every one of those difficult experiences was essential to your becoming the kind of person you are today and to achieving your ultimate goal. A characteristic of successful men and women, as I mentioned before, is that they never use the word failure. They look upon temporary defeats and setbacks as simply another way of learning how to succeed. They seek within every obstacle or disappointment the seed of an equal or greater benefit or opportunity. They learn from every experience. They refuse to get upset. They keep their minds calm, positive, and focused on their goals. As a result, they keep their superconscious capabilities switched on. Your superconscious mind operates best under two conditions. The first is when your conscious mind is concentrating 100% on a specific problem or goal. The second is when your conscious mind is busy with something else altogether. You should try both methods on anything you want to accomplish. Here's a simple 5-step process you can use to bring all the powers of your superconscious mind to bear on a single issue. Step 1. Define the problem or goal clearly, preferably in writing. What is it exactly that you want to achieve, or exactly what is the problem? Step 2. Gather as much information as you can. Do research, ask questions, and actively seek the answer that you need. Step 3. Consciously try to solve the problem by reviewing all the information you have gathered. Step 4. If you have still not been able to solve the problem consciously, turn it over to your superconscious mind. Release it confidently, the way you would release a balloon, and let it float away. Step 5. Get your conscious mind busy elsewhere. Turn your attention away and let your superconscious mind take care of the problem for you. Take any problem you're wrestling with right now and try this method on it. You will often be amazed at the results. Your superconscious mind will bring you exactly the right answer at exactly the right time. And when the answer comes, you must act on it immediately. It is time-dated material. If you get the urge to telephone someone or to say something or do something and it feels exactly right, act in faith and follow your instincts. The outcome will always be equal to or better than you could have expected. Here's another action exercise for you to try. Schedule 1 hour of solitude, during which you sit perfectly still for the entire 60 minutes. Discipline yourself to do this as soon as possible. During this period of silence, put everything out of your mind. Push your problems aside. Let your mind wander. Daydream. Don't try to think of anything specific. Temporarily step outside of your work and personal life. Turn everything over to your superconscious mind and release all your cares and worries. Sometime during this hour, your mind will go calm and clear. You will feel relaxed and happy. And with no effort at all on your part, exactly the answer you need at that moment will come to you. At the end of the hour, get up and follow your intuition. Do what your superconscious has guided you to do. Don't worry about whether or not someone else will approve or agree. When you begin to do this regularly, you'll probably never make another mistake. Remember, when you have clearly defined goals and detailed plans, backed by a positive mental attitude and a calm, confident expectation of success, you activate your superconscious mind into bringing you virtually anything you could ever want in life. When you affirm positively, visualize clearly, and believe absolutely, you will be led irresistibly to do and say the right things at the right time in every situation. You unlock your full potential for health, happiness, and prosperity. You bring yourself into complete alignment with the greatest power of the universe. Learning how to develop and maintain superior relationships can do more for your career and for your personal life than perhaps anything else you can accomplish. According to one study, more than 95% of men and women let go from their jobs over a 10-year period were fired because of poor social skills rather than lack of competence or technical ability. Fortunately, you can become extremely skilled at getting along with other people. There are 7 positive, constructive, and psychologically sound steps you can take to improve the way you interact with others. Each of these behaviors appeals to the deep subconscious needs of people to feel important, valued, and respected. These subconscious needs were formed in early childhood, and if you can satisfy them, you'll be amazed at how much more people will like you. The first of these is to be agreeable. People like to be around agreeable men and women, individuals with whom they can freely and easily discuss a great variety of subjects. When you nod, smile, and agree with a person who is talking, he feels more valuable and respected. He feels that what he has to say is important, and therefore he is also important. When someone says something that you feel is incorrect, the best policy is just to let it go. But if for some reason the matter is so important that you cannot let it pass, you can still remain agreeable by using what is called third-party disagreement. With this method, you put the words of your argument into the mouth of an imaginary or non-present third person. You say something like, "That's a very interesting point, Bill, but if someone were to ask this question, how would you answer it?" Then, put your question into the mouth of someone else. Or you could ask, "What do you think our customers would say if they knew we were doing this?" Or, "How do you think our bankers would respond to our taking this course of action?" In each case, you can continue to be easygoing and agreeable while raising the questions that are in your own mind. Just put the words in someone else's mouth. The advantage of this method is that if the person has a good answer, you can go along without having been disagreeable. If the other person cannot answer the question, he can change his mind without losing face. Your decision to become an agreeable and easygoing person will lower your stress levels and increase your ability to influence others to help you. You will raise the self-esteem of others and feel better about yourself as well. Second, practice acceptance. Each of us is conditioned to seek the acceptance of other people. The infant starts off looking into the face of his mother or father to see if he is loved, respected, wanted, important, funny, intelligent, and so on. As we grow up, we look into the faces of other people to see how we are doing. We have a deep need to be accepted by others, even by people we don't know. Many social problems are caused by people and groups crying out to be accepted on their own terms by others. When you step up to the plate and express genuine, unconditional acceptance of another person, you raise that person's self-esteem, you improve his self-image, and you make him or her feel relaxed and safe in your company. And what do you have to do to express acceptance? Simple. Just smile. When you smile at another person, he feels valuable, important, and worthwhile. He feels better about himself. And all it costs you is a simple expression of genuine warmth. Of course, the hardest time to smile is when you don't feel like smiling at all, but you can act your way into feeling. If you force yourself to smile at the people you meet, you will begin to feel better again. The clouds of negativity will break up and blow away. Gradually, your smiles will become more and more genuine. You'll raise your own self-esteem by making an effort to raise the self-esteem of others. And you do it by smiling. The third way you can raise the self-esteem of others is by expressing appreciation. One of the deepest cravings of human nature is the need to be appreciated. Whenever you express gratitude or appreciation toward another person for anything that the other person has done, you make him or her feel more valuable, more competent, and more worthwhile. All it takes to express appreciation are the simple words, "Thank you." Each time you say "thank you" to another person, his self-esteem increases. Your thanks reward and reinforce his behavior and increase the likelihood that he will repeat it. Develop the habit of saying thank you to everybody for anything and everything they do, and send thank you notes. They are some of the most powerful relationship builders ever invented. When you send a thank you note to someone, even one that contains only a few words, he or she often remembers you positively for months or even years. You can set yourself apart from the crowd by becoming known for the different ways that you express gratitude toward other people. The fourth way to raise the self-esteem of others is to express approval of them on every possible occasion. The expression of approval or praise is one of the fastest and most predictable ways to make people feel happy and proud. Giving praise and recognition to other people is the surest way to reinforce their behaviors and to make them want to help you and cooperate with you. Praising is an art. Great leaders, successful business people, excellent parents are all good at praising. There are several things you can do to achieve the maximum effect from your praising of other people. First, the praise should be immediate. The sooner you praise an action or behavior, the greater the impact it has. Some companies make the mistake of giving people appraisals every 3 or 6 months or even once a year. But when you give a person praise long after the incident has passed, it has very little effect on their feelings about themselves or their future actions. So, praise immediately or as close in time to the behavior as you possibly can. Second, the praise should be specific. When you praise a specific action or behavior, you assure that the specific action or behavior is repeated. However, if you praise generally, as some people do, it has little effect on the recipient. For example, if you say to your secretary, "You're doing a great job," your words will have only a moderate impact. But if you say, "You did an excellent job typing and getting that report out on Thursday," you'll be much more likely to see future reports completed and sent out on time. In praising children, the same rule holds true. Instead of saying, "You're a great kid," say, "You did a super job of making your bed and cleaning up your bedroom this morning." Whatever specific accomplishment you praise, your child is much more likely to repeat it. The rule is, praise what you want to see repeated, praise it immediately, and praise it specifically. Finally, praise in public. If you must correct a person, correct the person in private, but praise the person in front of others. The more people that you praise someone in front of, the more it boosts that person's self-esteem and self-respect. Awards and recognition given in front of large audiences of coworkers have the greatest impact of all on a person's self-esteem and subsequent behavior. People may work harder for more money, but they will crawl over broken glass to get more praise and recognition. All great leaders are aware of this and use their positions to dispense praise generously. It was Napoleon who said, "I have discovered a remarkable thing. Men will die for ribbons." People will rise to their best to earn the respect and recognition of others. The fifth way to improve your relationships with others is through admiration. Whenever you admire another person for something he or she has accomplished, for some personality trait, or for some possession, you raise his or her self-esteem. You can use admiration almost anywhere and in almost any situation. You can admire personality traits or qualities. When you compliment a person for being punctual, or for being generous, or for being persistent, or for being determined, you make that person feel more valuable and important. You can admire people's possessions. People often invest a lot of emotion in the things they acquire. For example, most people put a lot of thought into the furniture and fixtures they purchase for their homes. You can never go wrong complimenting a person on how attractive her home or her living room looks. People also put a lot of thought into their clothes. You are guaranteed to make a woman feel better about herself by complimenting her on any article of her clothing or accessories. You can achieve the same effect with a man by complimenting him on his clothes, especially his shoes or his tie. Men usually spend a lot of time thinking about the ties they wear and selecting the shoes they buy. They will be both surprised and happy when you admire them. You can admire people's accomplishments as well. You can compliment them on the education they've acquired or the position they've arrived at. You can admire the business they've built or anything else that they've achieved. Everyone has accomplished something that is worthy of your admiration. Your job is to find it and compliment him or her on it. Let me add one note of caution, however. Be sincere. Only express appreciation, approval, or admiration when you genuinely feel it. You must honestly mean what you are saying. If you don't, people will feel that you're trying to manipulate them, and you will get the opposite response of the one you desire. The other person's self-esteem will go down, and he will react to you with distrust and defensiveness. The sixth way to build the self-esteem of the people around you is simply to pay attention to them. In your relationships with others, the amount of attention you pay to them is the chief indicator of how important they are to you. The very act of paying attention to a person increases his or her self-esteem. The act of ignoring a person lowers his or her self-esteem. indifference often makes him or her feel angry and defensive. How do you pay proper attention to other people? You practice the white magic of listening. It's only when you listen and listen well to another person that you demonstrate to the other person that he or she is valuable and important. Listening builds trust. When you listen attentively, the other person likes you and trusts you far more than if you don't. He or she is then far more open to being influenced by you. Listening builds self-discipline. It requires tremendous personal mastery and self-control to listen attentively to another person. Active listening requires that you control your attention and keep yourself focused on the person speaking. The more you can discipline yourself to listen without distraction, the more effective you will become in other areas of your life as well. And how do you listen attentively? Well, face the speaker directly rather than at an angle. Lean slightly forward toward the speaker. Watch the mouth and eyes of the other person closely. And listen without interrupting. Most people are so busy thinking about what they're going to say when the other person takes a breath that they seldom hear what the other person is really saying. Whenever a speaker senses that the listener is just waiting for a chance to jump in, or that the other person's thoughts are somewhere else, perhaps busily preparing a response, the speaker feels irritated, uncomfortable, and often insulted. So, be sure to pause before replying. When the speaker finishes, pause for 3 to 5 seconds before saying anything. This way, you allow the other person's remarks to sink in, and you actually understand the other person more completely. Also, you avoid interrupting the other person if he or she has just paused to collect his thoughts. And when you pause before replying, you make it clear with your silence that you consider what he has just said to be important. You are giving it careful consideration. It is a compliment to the speaker to have the listener sit quietly and think about his or her remarks before responding, whatever the response may be. To listen better, ask questions for clarification. Asking questions assures that you fully understand what the other person has said. One of the best questions you can use to assure that what you heard and what the person said are the same thing is to ask simply, "How do you mean?" My experience in sales, marketing, consulting, and training has been that if you have any doubt at all about what the person really means, you have probably not understood. It's essential to good communications that you ask questions to assure clarity. There are other open-ended questions you can ask as well as, "How do you mean?" An open-ended question is one that cannot be answered with a yes or a no. Open-ended questions begin with words like what, how, why, where, when, and who. The additional benefit of asking open-ended questions is that you get more time to listen, more of an opportunity to build trust, and more of an opportunity to fully understand what the other person is thinking and feeling. When you're speaking, all you can say is what you already know. But when you're listening, it's possible for you to learn something new. Then, feedback the person's words to him or her. Paraphrase what he or she has said in your own words. When you feed it back to him, you compliment him. You show how closely you've been paying attention. In fact, until you can feed back his or her meaning correctly, you haven't really understood. Try this when another person finishes speaking. Pause for 3 to 5 seconds and then say, "Let me make sure that I understand you. What you're saying is this," and then go on to feed it back in your own words. Make a decision today to become a better listener. Practice these methods of listening until they become second nature. Perhaps nothing will increase your popularity and your effectiveness more than your developing excellent listening skills. The 7th way to raise the self-esteem of others is to utilize the principle of the boomerang. This principle says that whatever genuine emotion you express toward any other person will boomerang back on you sooner or later. Whenever you express a positive sentiment to or about someone else, it will eventually come back to you. If you express a negative thought or idea, the same principle holds true. So make sure that whatever you say about others is what you want to return to you, probably multiplied. So resist the temptation to criticize, condemn, or complain. Practice being agreeable and accepting. Express appreciation, approval, and admiration. Listen attentively to others when they speak, and remember the boomerang. If you do all these things, you'll make others feel terrific about themselves, and you'll be welcome wherever you go. These guidelines on getting along better with others shine forth at their very best in the art of conversation. It is in conversing with other people, the easy give and take, the exchange of information and opinions, that a person demonstrates the quality of his or her personality. Here are some ideas that will help you to be a better conversationalist in any work or social situation. First, cue the subject to your listener. Talk to people about subjects that interest them. Any subjects, including the subjects that used to be taboo in conversation, are okay if they're of interest to the person you're speaking with. You can discuss politics and religion if the other people you're talking to want to do it. But if you see that you're getting no response to a particular subject, back off quickly and talk about something else. One of the best ways to open a conversation is simply to ask the person, "What sort of work do you do?" followed by, "And how did you get into that business anyway?" The second way to be a better conversationalist is to take your turn. This means, of course, no monologue. If ever you find that you have talked for 3 minutes straight without question or comment from your listeners, you can be pretty sure that you are talking on a subject of interest only to yourself. Third, think before you speak. Avoid saying anything that would make someone uncomfortable, unhappy, or self-conscious. Be tactful and aware of the feelings and sensitivities of other people. Getting along well with others is perhaps the most important thing that you ever learn to do. Get out of yourself and get into the lives and concerns of others. Become genuinely interested in them. Ask them questions and listen to them. Think of ways that you can help them. And get busy working on yourself and your goals. Develop your unique talents. Get good at what you do. The better you do the things that are important to you, the more you like yourself, and the more you like and respect yourself, the more comfortable and effective you are with others. Visualize, affirm, and act the part. Work on yourself as if your future depended upon it, because it does. You cannot change the world, but you can present the world with one improved person, yourself. You can go to work on yourself to make yourself into the kind of person you admire and respect. You can become a role model and set a standard for others. You can control and discipline yourself to resist acting or speaking in a negative way toward anyone for any reason. You can insist upon always doing things the loving way rather than the hurtful way. When I was a teenager, before I set out to see the world, I spent a good deal of time thinking about the meaning of life. What am I here for? What is the reason for existence? Who am I? Where did I come from? Where am I going? I'm sure that everyone at some time has wondered about the reasons for his or her individual existence on this planet. Even as a young man, I had come to the conclusion that love is the most important thing in the world. Everything that you ever read about the meaning and purpose of life brings you back to the idea and the importance of love. Everything you do that makes you love and respect yourself makes you more capable of expressing love toward others. Every time you do or say anything kind or loving toward another person, you increase the amount of love you have for yourself. Every time you engage in a loving act, you make the world a better place in which to live. Each time you express love toward someone else, whether they seem to need it or not, you enrich and enhance the quality of his or her life. You simultaneously enrich and improve the quality of your own life as well. You put yourself on the side of the angels. You make your life a blessing to others and a wonderful experience for yourself. When you look back over the landscape of your life, you will find that your most precious assets are the thoughts and memories of the people you've loved and who've loved you. Your biggest mistakes, your greatest regrets, are all associated with love, with not having loved enough or having been loved enough. Love is the beginning and the end, the alpha and the omega. Your purpose in life is to become a totally loving person. Life is a matter of priorities, of choices. Your life is what you make it by the priorities you set and the things you choose to focus your attention upon. Your job is to live joyously, and this is only possible by filling your mind with thoughts of love, compassion and forgiveness. And the most wonderful thing about love is that you can fill your life with it by deciding to do so. The choice is yours. It always has been. I wish you luck. I wish you success and happiness. And above all, I wish you love.
Maximum Achievement by Brian Tracy. Maximum Achievement was written and read by Brian Tracy. It was abridged for audio by Lauren B. Church. The recording engineer was Scott Higby. Antonia Boyle was the director. The associate producer was Christine Jemay Nelson. Maximum Achievement was produced by Karen Frillman.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.